QST from the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for March 20th, 2013. The Aries Audio e-letter report is a voice version of the Aries e-letter, which is compiled and written by Rick Palm, K1CE. The Aries e-letter is available online at arrl.org/ares-el. Or you may listen to the audio version at arrl.org/ares-e-letter-audio-version. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. And my audio script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB, in Laurel, Maryland. In this issue, we have for you National Hurricane Conference Amateur Radio Sessions coming up next week, Mississippi Tornadoes, Aries Responses, Freak Snowstorm Hits Billings, Montana, Ham's Rally, Hillsborough County, Florida, active in Operation Radar 2, Ham's Work When Cell Phones Don't in Florida Swamp, U.S. National Grid, a geospatial tool for public service communications. Letters. Visit the new Citizens Corps and CERT web pages. Tips. Batteries at the heart of portable comms. FEMA tip. Test your readiness. And K1CE for a final. Now the news. National Hurricane Conference Amateur Radio Sessions coming up next week. The National Hurricane Conference, or NHC, will be held next week, March 25th through 28th, at the Hilton New Orleans Riverside in New Orleans, Louisiana. There will be several amateur radio activities going on during the week, especially on Monday. The NHC leadership continues to recognize the valuable contribution of Aries, and again invited us to participate with three sessions as follows. NHC Session 1 will be held on Monday, March 25th, from 10:30 to 12 noon. This is the main amateur radio session of the National Hurricane Conference, and will cover Hurricanes Sandy and Isaac amateur radio responses. Session 2 will be held Monday from 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. This session will cover amateur radio at the National Hurricane Center, the WX4 NHC Haiti Earthquake Mission, VOIP Hurricane Watch Net, and will feature special guest speaker Dr. Rich Nabb, director of the National Hurricane Center. Session 3 will be held on Monday from 3:30 to 5 p.m. This session is designed for emergency management personnel and is titled Amateur Radio Wrap Session, The Emergency Manager's Hidden Resource. This is an increasingly popular session where emergency management personnel from all over the country interact with Aries personnel on aspects of disaster communications. All hams are invited, at no cost, to attend the amateur radio sessions at the National Hurricane Conference. We encourage you to visit and participate in all the activities you can and learn more about Aries communications in the context of hurricane disasters. Hope to see you there. Thanks to Greg Surratt, W4OZK, the ARRL Southeastern Division Director, for this submission. Now it's time to allow repeaters to identify. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for March 20th, 2013. Mississippi Tornadoes, Aries Responses. On February 10th, a line of severe storms pushed east across Mississippi, resulting in numerous severe thunderstorm watches and warnings, as well as tornado watches and warnings. The storm produced heavy rains, flash flooding, and tornadoes, and left behind widespread damage, debris, and injuries. One tornado track measured approximately 75 miles long, with touchdowns in Marion, Lamar, and Forest counties, with Forest County the most heavily impacted. DEC Larry Morgan, AG5Z, reported that as the EF4 tornado approached Hattiesburg, informal emergency nets were started on two local repeaters. The nets eventually merged on the 146.775 MHz repeater. When the net got a confirmed report of a tornado on the ground, it went into a more formal mode. Calls were made to Forest and Lamar County EOCs to see if ARRI's support was needed. Since their communications were not disrupted, the net was asked to stand by to be called if needed. Several stations sent damage reports, and those needing forwarding were sent to the Forest County EOC. Gerald Shannon, KF5AQN, reported a gas leak near the CVS Pharmacy on Highway 49. Mr. Morgan forwarded the message to the Forest County EOC by telephone. There were several other informal health and welfare and damage report messages handled as well. During the same storm event, Jasper County EC Albert McDonald, WV1Q, reported that the South Central Skywarn and Jasper County ARRIs activated an emergency net session for adverse weather in their served counties. A host of storm spotters and ARRIs members reported on this dangerous cell in the areas of Jones, Jasper, Wayne, Smith, Lamar, Forest, and Clark counties. Operators played key roles in listening for emergency traffic out of the affected areas. Partial phone and numerous power outages were reported, as well as building damage. Central Mississippi Skywarn Coordinator Linda Goodman, KE5PYM, reported that the Central Mississippi Skywarn net activated on February 10th at 10:30 a.m. and closed at 12 midnight for a total of 13.5 hours of operation. The net had 40 check-ins on VHF and passed 15 pieces of traffic. But there was no rest for ARRIs in Hattiesburg. The Red Cross requested assistance on February 21st. Hams were asked to provide backup communication between two active shelters and the Red Cross headquarters facility. Operators met with Red Cross officials and others to work out an activation plan. Hams were advised that there was no equipment on site and responders would need to bring their own rigs and antennas. Hams provided a rig and coax for the headquarters site, with which the licensed Red Cross personnel operated. James Lee, NE5P, activated the shelter in Purvis, and Thomas Webb, AE5QX, activated the Hattiesburg shelter. Sam Williams, N5SP, stood by as relief operator if needed. The Red Cross secured the activation around 8 p.m. When the storm activity increased later that night, hams were called back in. The stations were secured once the severe weather passed around 1:30 a.m. The Red Cross again requested backup communications assistance on February 25th, and hams were dispatched to the Purvis shelter at 2 p.m. and the Hattiesburg shelter at 2:45 p.m. Both locations lacked on-site antennas, so operators managed to configure an adequate antenna from items they brought with them. James Ebner, N8JE, operated the Red Cross headquarters station that he had installed. As a result of the ARRI's effort, the American Red Cross South Mississippi Readiness and Response Manager, Susan Laney, sent a letter of commendation to DEC Larry Morgan, AG5Z, recognizing the efforts of the ARRI's operation in Hattiesburg. Thanks to Mississippi Section Manager Malcolm Keown, W5XX, for this report. Freak snowstorm hits Billings, Montana, hams rally. Ron Glass, WN7Y, Yellowstone County Emergency Coordinator in Billings, Montana, sent this report. At 2:45 p.m. on Sunday, March 3rd, the sunny, 53-degree day suddenly clouded over and snow started to fall. The NWS reported that the temperature had dropped 20 degrees in 50 minutes. Within minutes, Billings was enveloped in a total whiteout, with visibility of less than 100 feet in some areas. Most hams were out performing their activities of daily living when the storm hit. At 3:05 p.m., Ron Glass, WN7Y, received a text message from Linda Cornetette, KF7ITX, that power to her home was out. Mr. Glass worked his way home through the slushy roads and poor visibility. Upon arrival, Mr. Glass turned on his D-Star base radio and APRS station and began streaming live radar feeds from the NWS. He put his handheld on the public safety bands, scanning for reports. By this time, Richard Wilson, KF7ITU, had started an informal standby net from his spotting location near the airport and was receiving more reports from hams of power outages, whiteout driving conditions, and also reports over the public safety channels of slide-offs and vehicle crashes. Soon thereafter, the Zimmerman Trail Hill was closed, and traffic westbound from the airport traffic circle toward Lovina was being diverted back into Billings. Wilson said traffic was still allowed eastbound in front of the airport, but the vehicles that appeared out of the snow drove by and disappeared back into the snow, all within 200 yards. Air traffic into and out of Billings was suspended. At 4:25 p.m., in preparation for a possible call-up to help the city and county, Mr. Glass sent out a shared net control log on Google Drive and began logging all check-ins and radio traffic. At 4:29 p.m., several hams heard the Public Safety Sheriff West VHF repeater broadcast from the 9/11 Comm Center that the only way you can reach us now is via this VHF repeater and by cell phone. We will be contacting officers directly in the field via cell phone. Mr. Glass assumed that the new 800 MHz trunked system that was just upgraded last month must have faltered because of the power outages. At 4:50 p.m., Mr. Glass decided not to spin the standby net up into a full Yellowstone Aries or Yaris emergency net at this time for several reasons. One, the comm center had a workaround in place, cell phones. Two, the cell phones appeared to be working with no expectation of dropping. And three, the NWS radar showed clearing skies and almost zero precipitation behind the initial violent frontal boundary. The latter was confirmed with four hams who had good visibility to the west and northwest, clearing skies, almost blue skies already. By 4:59 p.m., hams reported that Northwestern Energy Power had been restored to their homes west of Shiloh Road, and at 5 p.m., Mr. Glass closed the standby net. Mr. Glass finished his report by writing, "We had 18 check-ins during the net, with some via cell phone text messages only, some on D-Star, and others were monitoring D-Star, some on 147.360 MHz, some on 145.410 MHz, and several hams on repeaters." Glass received several emails from people asking, "Did you say your group does storm spotter training in April? When and where may we attend?" Thanks to everyone that helped, either by checking in with reports or standing by in listen-only mode in case we were activated. Our thanks go out again to Ron Glass, WN7Y, for this report. We'll pause once again to allow repeaters to identify. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for March 20th, 2013. Hillsborough County, Florida, active in Operation Radar 2. Hillsborough County Aries Races in the Tampa Bay area of Florida was very active in Operation Radar 2, Florida's statewide interoperability exercise held early last month. Over 35 amateurs were involved. We were requested to participate by Preston Cook, the Hillsborough County Fire Rescue's Director of Emergency Management. Three teams were deployed by the county. The first team comprised four first responders, Thurnell Chip Shields, Steve Lawton, Mark Fisher, and Chris Talent. Two became involved in leadership positions during the exercise. Mr. Shields acted as the Region 4 COM-L, and Mr. Talent as the Region 4 Safety Officer. All four of these first responders have earned their amateur licenses over the course of the last couple of years. Two Aries Racy's teams were sent up to the exercise location at Camp Blanding. One team was responsible for deploying the Region 4 MARC unit, which is a state asset consisting of a cache of radios and a 100-foot trailer-mounted tower, and the third team operating primarily as a remote HF base. Aries Racy's officials deployed Bill Williams, AG4QX, to operate as AUXCOM leader, as well as Larry Gispert, KR4X, Jim LaFollette, W4WBL, Ian Renton, W4RIR, the leader of the MARC unit team, Warner Bud Johnson, WB4J, and Robert Chapman, KK4GKH. All teams successfully deployed long-haul and local stations and communicated back to Hillsborough County and the other points around the state and the state warning point. In Hillsborough County, Keating Floyd, KC4HSI, the Aries EC and Racy's officer, coordinated operations with local and remote teams from the Hillsborough County Emergency Operations Center. Hillsborough County Aries Racy's has a strong MARS presence, with operators from all branches of MARS involved. That bond with our military was strengthened by coordinating with the 290th JCSS of the Florida Air National Guard. We communicated with elements from the JCSS in person and over MARS circuits. That amounted to over 150 hours for the firefighters and over 500 volunteer hours from Hillsborough County during the course of the week-long exercise. Positive items from this exercise included the opportunity to participate in a statewide communications exercise remotely and locally. This simulated real-world conditions, with the need to communicate with deployed Hillsborough County Aries and Racy's personnel, having been experienced after various hurricanes and the Haiti earthquake. There were issues in county, which included interesting slip-ups in passing message traffic. All messages eventually got through, and everyone kept up their spirits and had a good time, but we learned that we need to better practice message handling. Volunteer organizations have the critical need to ensure there is something for volunteers to do, and an exercise is a great outlet for that need. Thanks to Aries EC Racy's officer Keating Floyd, KC4HSI in Hillsborough County, Florida, for this submission. Hams work when cell phones don't in Florida swamp. After a day of exploring the Green Swamp Wildlife Management Area with his grandson, Joe Cody, KE4WDP of Winter Haven, Florida, saw that the roads were flooding and becoming hazardous. As he tried to drive out of the area, Mr. Cody's small pickup truck got bogged down in the mud. Since he was out of cell phone range, Cody tried calling for help on the Dade City repeater. Richard Parker, KF4ORW of Dade City, Florida, heard the call and answered. After hearing the situation, Mr. Parker called 911 in Pasco County, who put him in touch with the dispatch in neighboring Polk County. Mr. Cody passed his location on to Mr. Parker, who in turn passed it on to the Polk County Sheriff's Office and told us Polk County 911 took over and they called me back several times for more information. Mr. Parker continued, I was able to relay information from Mr. Cody to them. Then Ted Bulmansky, W4TKB, who is also from Dade City, started monitoring and copying Mr. Cody's information. About 30 minutes later, Parker saw a helicopter fly over and around Mr. Cody's position. After another 30 minutes, he radioed back on the repeater, saying he was on his way home, thanks to a Lake County deputy in a sheriff's office truck that had a winch. Mr. Parker explained, "We learned that Joe was 8 miles inside Lake County." Mr. Parker continued, "That's why the Lake County Sheriff's Office responded instead of the Polk County authorities. The Polk County Sheriff's Office called me back to say that the helicopter from Lake County found the truck inside Lake County and sent both a deputy from Lake County as well as a fish and game officer and winched him out of the mud. They called me back to thank us for assisting the stranded pair. Ham radio still works when other forms of communications don't. Thanks to the ARRL West Central Florida Section Public Information Coordinator, Kevin Poorman, KV4CT, for this information." Now we'll take a brief pause for repeater stations to identify. This is the ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter for March 20th, 2013. U.S. National Grid, a geospatial tool for public service communications. As a result of Hurricane Sandy, Northeast responders were certainly faced with response situations in unfamiliar areas or where common navigation aids were gone, flooded, or burned over. When such conditions exist, what tool should be employed to quickly allow for positional reporting and navigation? The answer that may not be familiar with us is the U.S. National Grid, or USNG. The USNG is a national standard coordinate system designed for land-based operations and is consistent with military operations since 1949. Amateur radio operators staffing EOCs and supporting emergency communications should be familiar with the USNG, as responders and emergency managers will be using it. In October 2012, the Florida Division of Emergency Management issued a new field operations guide that describes how Florida emergency services will use USNG. USNG has been a part of Florida's high-level planning documents since 2010, with references going back to 2006. USNG is effectively the same as the Military Grid Reference System, or MGRS, and is a derivative of the Universal Transverse Mercator, which many hikers employ routinely. USNG may be displayed on your smartphone easily, and a GPS receiver is not mandatory. Paper maps are always a priority, and all should include USNG grid lines when created. Fire and law enforcement computer-aided dispatch and mobile data terminals can also be made to display properly labeled grids. All maps need a grid system in order to be most usable. Maps already in use, or those found in office supply or convenience stores, typically display non-interoperable bingo-type grids. Maps from the Internet are generally devoid of grid lines and thus are effectively just pictures. What responders and emergency communicators need are properly labeled gridded USNG maps. USNG can specify areas of 1 kilometer, 100 meters, or 10 meters with as little as 4, 6, or 8 digits respectively. This facilitates easier radio communications of coordinates. USNG area references will be used tactically. 100-meter or 10-meter grids can identify helispots, structures, homes, bridges, specific damage, etc., in combination with or in place of the paradigm of street address, as appropriate. Out-of-area personnel may have no familiarity with local addresses, but when versed in the simple XY nature of USNG, finding a location can be less stressful and certainly more efficient. USNG coordinates for all locations, such as shelters, points of distribution, staging areas, etc., should be added to all planning documents. USNG is designated by the states of Minnesota and Florida as the preferred coordinate system. As of November 2011, federal agencies comprising the National Search and Rescue Committee have designated USNG as the coordinate system for all land search and rescue operations. Thanks to Al Stutt, KF4KIR in Coca, Florida, for this valuable information. Now it's time for letters. Our first letter comes from Tom Ponte, WB1CZX, the EC for Perquimans County, North Carolina. His letter is titled, CERT Members Are Qualified, Not Certified. Mr. Ponte wrote, In your last issue, a writer said, Pleased to see your article, The Future of Aries is Certain, in January 2013 QST. I am CERT trained and certified, along with being a licensed operator. In our group, CERT members are qualified after taking certain specified courses, such as IS-317, but not certified. This is a small point, but may have legal ramifications. Our second letter comes from David P. Byram, KA4EBX, a communications engineer for the Pinellas County, Florida Sheriff's Office. David writes to us about Professional Commends Amateurs after Operation Radar 2. He says, in response to Florida's major interoperability exercise held last month and reported in last month's issue, a professional participant wrote, As someone who has been involved in first responder communications for many years, this type of training is what is needed on an annual basis. Regardless if you're a volunteer or a communications professional, any opportunity to train in a real environment validates what you, as an individual or as a member of a team, can offer. There was excellent participation by the amateur community. Amateur radio operators apprised a lot of us with their level of professionalism. Visit the new Citizen Corps and CERT web pages. The Citizen Corps website and CERT web page have relocated to new homes. FEMA has consolidated all of its online content, including content currently on its Citizen Corps website, into two websites, FEMA.gov and Ready.gov. In addition to reducing costs, this website migration provides an opportunity to increase the visibility of our programs to an entirely new audience and to recruit new volunteers. The new website locations also give you easy access to more resources than ever, and an updated look and feel for online content. Now, when you try visiting the original Citizen Corps website, you should be automatically redirected to the new web page. Likewise, if you try visiting the original CERT website, you should be automatically redirected to its new web page. The new web pages should have all of the functions of the original Citizen Corps and CERT websites, including program registration and profile updates. We also intend to build out-of-state specific pages to drive more traffic to the state websites. If anything is missing or does not work properly, please do not hesitate to reach out to us at CitizenCorps, that's all one word, @FEMA.DHS.gov. Again, that's CitizenCorps, all one word, no spaces, @FEMA.DHS.gov. Be sure to check out the new Citizen Corps and CERT web pages today for the latest program news and updates. It's time to pause again for station identification. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for March 20th, 2013. Tips: Batteries at the Heart of Portable Comms. Back about 20 years ago, nickel-cadmium, or NiCad, batteries were notorious for having a pronounced memory effect. This particular mechanism has been eliminated in current NiCad cells, but our memory of it, so to speak, is long. Today's batteries have some kind of memory in which the capacity of the battery changes with patterns and depths of discharge. Each type of battery chemistry exhibits this effect for different reasons. Some types stronger than others.
Unfortunately, it's also referred to as memory effect, which is confusing to those of us who remember the old memory effect. Because this effect varies with different battery types, blanket statements about it are unwise. Isidore Buckman's excellent and very readable book, Batteries in a Portable World, and its sibling website, BatteryUniversity, all one word, .com, tackle the full spectrum of battery types and how to apply them. On the website, I highly recommend taking the opportunity to read the section, How to Prolong Battery Life. The book is available from the ARRL store and other booksellers. Both should put a charge into your understanding of this important energy source that is crucial to effective MCOM operation. Good luck, and may your batteries live long and prosper. Thanks to Ward Silver, N0AX, in St. Charles, Missouri. FEMA tip: test your readiness. The FEMA Private Sector Resilience Tip of the Week for March 11, 2013, is assess your organization's emergency preparedness with the READY rating system. Take a look at readyrating, that's all one word, .org, readyrating.org. Now it's time for Rick Palm, K1CE's final. Jeffrey Way, KA1IOR, wrote, I enjoyed this word of wisdom relayed from Ward Silver, N0AX, from the CQ Contest Reflector. Mr. Silver said, in my experience, I can say with certainty that spending time running in a contest is excellent preparation for operating as a net control station during an emergency. The hours spent handling sweepstakes exchanges reinforces a level of discipline needed to accurately handle health and welfare traffic during a relief operation that comes during and after a natural catastrophe. If one is ready to face it, one usually arrives at recognizing the part of the equation that usually needs the most improvement is the operator. And that's the ARRL audio e-letter for March 20th, 2013. The ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter is a monthly service of the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio. The Aries Audio E-Letter is a voice version of the ARRL Aries E-Letter, compiled and written by Rick Palm, K1CE. To learn more about amateur radio, or to get the latest in amateur radio news, visit ARRL.org on the World Wide Web. Our thanks to this month's contributors. My audio script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB, in Laurel, Maryland. Thanks for listening, and 73. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. Copyright 2013 ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. All rights reserved.